And we're live. Welcome everyone to Afterburn Soccer Show. Excited to see you on with us. Of course, you can always share the stream as you found it, share it with other FC Dallas fans, and we'll take your comments and questions live, whether you're on Facebook or YouTube or Twitter, whatever. We will respond and you will help shape the show tonight. My name is Nathan Hill, the host here. You can follow me at Nathan J. Hill on Twitter. Our regular friend on the end is Jose. You can follow him at El Chico Carmona.
Hello.
And welcoming us is an old friend of FC Dallas fans everywhere. And of course, and of the show, he was on an episode of the show way back when we were with Big D. Excited to welcome him back on, that he could take some time out on this Monday evening. Welcome our friend, longtime commentator for covering FC Dallas, Steve Davis. You can follow him there at SteveDavis90 on Twitter.
Howdy, boys. I think it was on more than once, but I guess a couple of them weren't too memorable. So, you
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe you're right. It's been a while, and I've had a couple of beers since then. So, you know.
Yeah, no worries. No worries. Yeah.
Well, welcome. We got a lot to get into, and it begins, of course, with this loss on the road as FC Dallas traveled to New Jersey against the New York Red Bulls, going down 2-1 in a rain-soaked, pretty miserable-looking affair out there. One of those grueling sort of matches. Jesus Ferreira, the positive, he found his opening goal of the 2024 campaign. It was good to see him get the start after some injury time out. And a great little free kick that at least give a shout for FC Dallas to get back into it. But unfortunately, the Red Bulls were just too dangerous and took their opportunities and were able to claim that 2-1 victory. Their home opener for the season. Let's just start with just reactions from this match. I like, too, that we have a couple days to let it settle, and maybe some of the more intrusive thoughts are out of the picture, and we can look at things maybe a little more objective. So, Steve, what did you think about this match, from this performance from FC Dallas?
Yeah, you know, you're right. Tough conditions, although New York seemed to do okay in it. We had a little on a radio broadcast. We had a quick little debate about what's a worse condition, you know. And for me, 32 degrees and rainy is just about the worst. Owen Newkirk said snow is worse. I thought, no, come on. Rain is miserable when it's that cold. So, you know, the game itself, look, it's it wasn't a good performance. I think in some ways it might have been better than the Montreal home loss. Montreal, by the way, not a bad team at all. I think they proved that yesterday. I was said that after I watched them do a number on Orlando at first, then with the Dallas result. So you know, that whatever, you know, that was a week ago. On the New York game, look, you know, there's just a lot to talk about in terms of is it a really bad result? It's not a good one, but are there enough mitigating factors that maybe you hover your hand over the panic meter, but you don't start pounding it just yet? That's sort of that 35,000 foot view, and I know we'll get into the specifics then.
Yeah, Jose, your thoughts from the match?
I have to agree with everything Steve said, and a difficult place to play. I mean, I know we all were hoping for points or something, but Dallas has never won at New York Red Bull Arena, and the weather didn't help, and all the injuries just made it, you know, poured more mystery on top. I mean, I like the lineup. They on paper it looked like a solid lineup, but everyone could see where the weaknesses were in that lineup. And so while I think most of us fans are upset for the loss, we shouldn't be surprised by it, in all honesty. That's my opinion on that.
Well, here, let's go ahead and jump to this clip from Nico, because I did see this, got a little bit of chatter from folks hearing Nico's response and how the game played out. Well, and maybe before we do that, we can talk about the game state. Tumasi, was that a good call of a penalty on Tumasi? Steve, what are you?
It wasn't the worst call I've ever seen. It wasn't the best call I've ever seen. I don't know that there was a lot there. Lewis Morgan is a clever player. And when he got in – okay, first of all, if you get inside position in that moment, you know, okay, right there you're playing with house money, right? So he got inside position. Ima end up on his shoulder. That gave Lewis Morgan the opportunity to go down. I don't know if it went down easier, if it really, if Emma Tomasi is that strong, but when you put your hand on the shoulder, you know, you give the opportunity to make that call. Have I seen a lot worse inside the penalty area that wasn't called? Yeah, I have. But it's hard to, it's hard to find too much fault with it. Emma was put in a bad, Emma was in a bad position, literally, but he was, you know, he was asked to do something. We asked him on Friday at training, have you ever played right center back? And he said, no, I never have. Remember, I'm not defending him here. And sometimes people, I've got a buddy that says, you love Emma Tomasi, you never criticize him. And that's not true. But remember, he was a wing back, converted to an outside back, and now asked to play a center back. It's difficult. So penalty kick, probably, yes.
Okay. Jose?
Well, I agree with what Steve says, and at the same time, to exasperate the fact that Emma is not a center back, I mean, the wing back is Paul Areola, who's not really going to offer a lot of help on the defensive and, you know, to help protect him. At least in my opinion, I'm sure Paul's okay defensively, but playing wing back, I would say that's not his strength. Combine both of them on that side together, it's just tough. I mean, and as far as the penalty, even if you think it's a 50-50 call, it's in New York Red Bull Arena. It's very likely, you know, that call is going to go against you on the road. And you shouldn't be surprised by it because at the end of the day, it looked like a legit penalty to some people and enough for it to be called. And we all knew it. We all kind of groaned and said, oh, man, no one really argued it.
It's one of those, the more you watch, especially in this era of video-assisted review, that if the referee hadn't called it, I don't think they would have gone back and called a penalty. I think they would have said, oh, there's just not enough, you know. But because he called it, I think they could go back and look and go, well, there was contact. You know, he didn't make a gross and obvious, or whatever they call it, an obvious error. So,
clear
yeah,
obvious.
It was one of those difficult realities that and of course, and Emma was a little bit, I think it's harsh for the second goal to blame it all on him. The whole team was way up in the field, and it was just a fast break, and Emma couldn't get
a fast
in position.
Break with wing backs failing the track back.
Yeah, just which we've seen before. Tough night for him. Tough night, and he's bounced back before, but definitely not putting him in the best position to succeed, perhaps.
Yeah, look, on the second goal, I think there's a lot of blame to go around, and I keep hearing this thing about wingbacks not tracking back. You know, the other day it's Paul and Dante. Before that it was Bernie and Dante. And fair enough. Those are young players, though. Guys, there are other players that aren't tracking back. You know, not to single anybody out, but, you know, every week I watch teams when the ball gets behind them. They got seven or eight guys just busting their ass to get back. It's not just the wingbacks that aren't tracking back. I'm just going to kind of say it here. You know, Liam Fraser, if you go back and watch the goals, he's jogging back on some of the goals for FC Dallas this year. But I don't know why, you know, people keep signaling out the wingbacks when, you know, those guys have to get back too.
Yeah,
agreed.
Good point.
And, by the way, Jesus Ferreira, bad turnover. So let's just make sure we're let's make sure we're sort of parsing out the blame fairly here, because I love Jesus. He's a great player. He's not sharp right now, and he made a mistake. So we got to call that too.
Our buddy Hoach there checking in on the stream, saying hi, Dad. Okay, that's one of his little things he does.
I mean, Steve's right though on the turnover, you know, and I think he's right that no one's really called out the fact that Jesus turned the ball over and just showing rust. You know, you got all this missed time. You're gonna have a high quality player. It's still going to show that rust at times and inopportune times, and it was hard to watch, but. You know, kudos to New York for taking advantage of it.
Well, let's jump now to this clip from Nico after the game, speaking to media speaking to a reporter. Asked him, like, in one word to describe the game and then to elaborate a little bit. Here's what Nico said.
You were going to describe this game in one word. What would it be and why?
Unfair.
Why?
Because I think playing away with how we did it, with the personality that we show after conceded the first goal, and having the control of the game in the second half, and we just lacked a little bit on the final third to link some plays and some of the crosses and that we had to score the goal, and we were a little bit unlucky with the second goal.
Unfair, unlucky. Now, Steve, I know you've been to a lot of post-game calls. I've been to a number now in my short time reporting on following FC Dallas and stuff. Coaches are very diplomatic. They're never going to come out in the media, or very rarely. Maybe Peter Vermes has and stuff, and blast their players. You know, it has to be a really poor performance for the coach to come out and do that. So, but when this quote came out in Tom Bogert's and Steve Reuter's or Jeff Reuter's article in The Athletic today, there was a little bit of folks feeling like Nico was looking at a different game than the rest of us when he says we controlled most of the game and things like that. I saw a coach trying to help his team land softly, encourage his team when things didn't go their way. What was your take on that? Do you think the game was unfair for FC Dallas, or do you think Nico maybe had a little harsher words for the team after the match in the locker room?
Yeah, somewhere in the middle, Nathan. I don't know that. Well, first of all, coaches walk a tricky balance, right? You know, as you said, you know what they say publicly might be different than what they say to the team, which might be different than what they then, you know, like confide off the record. You know, Nico's a smart guy. He knows when things aren't going well and when things are going well. But Nico also has a little bit of a different view in terms of understanding that we could sit here, guys, and list five, maybe six starters that weren't available, you know, including some very important ones. So in Nico's view, what he saw was a team that's missing five or six starters, and he's thinking, hey, you know, a couple of one 50-50 penalty call, notwithstanding, we walk out of there out of miserable place, miserable conditions, a place we've never won. We walk out of there with the point. You know, and you would be hard-pressed to argue that. Now, on the other hand, I think what happens is you go back to the Montreal game. If they'd won that game against Montreal, even drawn against Montreal, you'd have taken the New York game and sort of you could excuse it, you could dismiss it as a one-off. But I think when fans hear Nico say that the other day, understanding, well, it was a late win against San Jose, then a home loss against Montreal, and then they didn't look particularly great up there. That, you know, now he's moving things around, and you know, maybe Nico could have read the room a little bit more there. But again, I go back to a long time ago, a coach of a really bad team. He was always coming out in the press saying things just like that. Oh, you know, guys, we're right there. We did this, we did that, and you know, he pulled me aside later. He's like, no, guys, of course I see it. I know that we're struggling. But he's told me, but if I don't believe in them, who is going to? Mm-hmm. If I don't show them publicly, I believe in you, who is going to?
Yeah.
So you sort of run it through that filter as well.
We got an interesting comment here from our buddy Hoach, for you directly, Steve, and he said Autocorrect messed it up. Did you get their El Matador scarf on the last game you worked?
I did not. Was I supposed to?
This is like they sent it up to the press box, but never got confirmation. Somebody
absconded with my scarf that I was supposed to get. I demand a full scale investigation of this. I will get to the bottom of this.
We'll find out. Yeah.
No, that's sweet. I'm sorry. I didn't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. He also writes, so we're just upset because this formation is supposed to increase shots on goal, but it's been flat out of the gate. So alarm bells starting to ring for fans. And And to be fair, even in a 4-3-3 or whatever, you know, what they had last season, there were plenty of flat starts as well. Sometimes it's like they'd have to get scored on to go, oh, hey, you know, we're, you know, we have a game to play here. And that's, it's a disappointing thing, but also a very mental thing. And I'm not sure what the solution is for this team other than having that vocal leadership, like an Ilar Mendy back on the pitch. What do you think?
The solution is patience, because every season, the offense is always the ones that get going last. You know, it's easier to get your defense organized, but your attack, especially when you're shuffling in missing pieces who haven't really played much together, it's going to struggle, and it's going to keep continuing struggling. Yes, we have the talent, but that talent hasn't played together significantly enough to build any kind of rapport with each other, and that's going to hurt. And the defense needs to shore it up and keep us within a goal for this team to have a chance, because I think we all agree that we'll have a very dangerous looking attack come midseason, but this early with everybody still coming back from injuries, missing time, it's going to be a rough watch, a lot of stuttering, a lot of inconsistency, and it's going to take time for everyone to gel.
And a lot of new guys. I mean, Kamungo, Sealy. I mean, this is a huge – there's going to be a learning curve with those guys as they continue to grow at this level.
Yeah, for sure. Not only learning curve with the young guys, but guys now coming into the lineup who are very important. You know, Peter Musa's now he's got two starts, so now you hope to – you start seeing some of that chemistry develop that you were just talking about. Jesus Ferreira, look – I did call him out for the mistake, but what are you going to do? You got to play the guy. You have to play him. You know, he doesn't get a preseason. You don't have that luxury now. So he's too important to the team. You have to let him get out there and get the fitness and get and shake the rust off. That's just what it is. You have to do it. Paul Arriola, I think they needed him to play in that underneath position, you know, in this 3-4-2-1 that they're playing. There's two forwards that sit underneath the high striker. Nico actually calls them number 10s. He calls them two number 10s. They needed Arriola in there because they really didn't have a creator. Nobody else further up the field outside of Yadamendi could really create anything up there. So now that we have Jesus, clearly he can create. Now Paul Arriola has to go back out to the wing where he hasn't trained at all in the preseason. They played him as the 10 all preseason. So that part is moving around. Now you've lost Yadamendi, so now they're adjusting there. So, you know, it's I'm really not making excuses, but you can sort of see some mitigating factors here. Now, I think a question you could fairly ask is, as they're doing all this, could they just be a little bit more pragmatic? Could they be a little more practical in what in the way they're doing things? Now, Nico wants to he's committed to the system. By the way, the system is this is the one that Columbus uses. This is Cincinnati. This is something I think that Tata Martino probably wanted to do at Miami. He just didn't have the personnel right now. So other teams are using the same system. This is not anything. This is Brighton. This is Bayer Leverkusen's about to win. Win the Bundesliga, which never happens, you know, and it is this system. So this can work. So the two questions you ask are, do they have the personnel for it right now? And then while they're adjusting, should they just be a little bit more practical? I wondered the other day, you've got a giant up there. You've got Peter Musa. He knows how to fight for balls. Should they have just in the bad conditions? I know it's not something they work on in training a lot, but can you just throw a few more balls up to him and just try to scrap out one more goal, get the point, and then go back home and work on your, you know, work on your formation after that.
Yeah, those are questions. And you also have this other reality now in this modern era of Major League Soccer, which is Pedro Musa is a huge signing for FC Dallas. You look around the news and Portland's going out and getting a legit big-time signing. Inter Miami seems just be able to easily recruit for some reason. I don't know why, like, they have a really famous player on their squad. You know, other clubs are going out and are signing big as well. So it's not like, hey, we may have missed someone like Musa last year, but other teams are getting reinforcements. And so the bar just keeps getting higher. And so that's a tough situation in the league and for FC Dallas when they thought just maybe this one piece will get us over the next, no, it's not going to just be that. They're going to have to keep building and looking for that spark and those folks to step in. And I'm right now inside in the sun. The sun is hitting me perfectly here. So it's nice. And
where are you in the world that the sun is shining so brightly? It's
California.
Dark,
I'm on the West Coast and okay. Daylight savings time. Boy, I tell you what, this is nice. This is good to know. I wondered about it if my I'm gonna have to adjust something. But anyway, let's talk about that right wing back position. We've seen three different starters. Steve, what's your take? Is Paul Ariel, is it going to be his job to lose, or are we still going to see a rotation until they can settle it down?
That's a good question. I think it's Paul's to lose right now. I think when we all heard 3-4-2-1, we thought, they have a good one in Paul Ariola. I think he can do the defensive work out there. They needed him to play that number 10 position. I talked to him before the Montreal game, and he said, "I'm loving it here. I love that position. I can go back out to the wing if they need me to, but I love playing that." And then sure enough, you know, Jesus comes back in lineup, and he goes right out to the wing. Well, just like I said a while ago, he hasn't had a match there. All preseason, he was playing the other position. So, you know, I think it's fair to give him a mulligan. I don't think he was particularly good there the other day. But I think, as a matter of fact, I think one of the reasons maybe he didn't really have an impact offensively, I think he was actually trying to stay back and help Emo over there on that side a little bit. And it's also a side that Liam Fraser plays. And you know, Fraser's got his assets, but I don't know that he's terrific in terms of covering a lot of ground. So Paul's got a lot of defensive responsibilities. And I'd mention the fact that's exactly where Red Bull went. You know, Forsberg, he usually plays left for them. The other day he played, he tilted inside a lot more, but they had Lewis Morgan over there. Morgan's a good player. They got Tolkien over there. Tolkien's a good player. So between that triangle, man, there's a lot going on there. And if you saw the infographs, it was about 50% of the attack up there, and then the rest split between central and right, maybe even a little bit more. So there was a lot happening over there on that side. Paul didn't really get up the wing a lot, but the other thing is in order for a wing back to get up the field, you got to establish a little bit more possession in midfield, and Dallas didn't really do a great job of that. So I don't really know, guys, if it's fair to judge Paul's abilities as a wing back in this formation off that one match. They get a home match coming up against Vancouver, and I think we all hope to see better.
Mm-hmm. Jose, any thoughts on that wing back position?
Well, I'm curious enough to see if Paul gets another shot at it. I thought he did a better job of it in the second half, and at least show signs of building on it. I mean, let's see what he can do with a couple of games under his belt at that position. Clearly they want Kamungo in his spot up top, and that's probably a better fit for Kamungo, who's they're trying to find a place for him, and he's more likely to figure that position out than the wingback position, where he's just looked lost. So it's, you know, they're trying to. Nico's trying to find a good place for everybody. He's got talent, and yeah, I think Paul will be there until, you know, whenever we get around to getting Giovanni Jesus back, who's the position's like tailor made for that guy, but he's still on the long list of players that are out.
Here's another good one from our buddy Hoach there. Ideal lineup and formation if every single player is healthy. Which seems that one of the challenges right now, I think this formation is made to get the most out of Ilar Amendi. And so when he's out, you really don't have a plug-and-play player in that caliber. Few teams do, of course. Mm-hmm. But I'm guessing he is the key part. And then you would hope that maybe Paxton next to him, someone with that motor, that high energy in the midfield, although we saw Frazier with Ilar Amendi a lot last season. So I don't know. And then Jesus as a number 10. What do you all think? What is the ideal lineup and formation if everyone is healthy?
You want to tackle it first, Jose?
Well, sure. I mean, based on the players that we have, you know, your back line, you already know it's going to be Junqua, and it's going to be Tafari and Ibiaga in the back. in the middle right now, I would say, from what I've seen, I would love to see Delgado and Ilara side by side. I honestly, right now, from what I've seen from Delgado, he looks like a guy who brings a lot to the table. And I think, considering the fact that Paxton can get healthy and Frazier is solid but not dynamic, I think that would be my ideal pairing right now, based on just from what I've seen from Delgado. On the wings, I think you got to give Dante time to settle in. He's still a kid. He's going to have inconsistent performances. He's going to have games where he looks like crap, but he's going to have games where he performs. So he just needs time there. He's young. On the right side, of course, it's going to be Giovanni Jesus. And on top, it's going to be Musa, Jesus, and Velasco. Those are the three guys that, if we ever get them up there together, should, you know, in the second half of the season, cost complete nightmares for opposing defenses. But that's a long ways ahead.
Well, I tell you what, I 100% agree about Delgado. I really like what I've seen so far. I can tell you that the coaches love him. Nico's talked to me about him before I ever saw him on the field, and then I see him on the field. And what he did the other day in terms of his ability to play forward quickly. Lynn Frazier is a good player, but I think he has a little bit of a tendency to play safe. You know, so his passes end up being lateral, just connecting passes. Whereas Patrickson Delgado came in, and maybe I'm being a little unfair there. Maybe his orders as he came in from the coaching staff was, you have to play forward. We're chasing the game now. So, but boy, he did. I mean, he comes in, he tackles. We know that. You see him for 10 minutes, you're like, hey, this guy loves to. He wants to go. He's a Carlos Carrizo starter kit. You know, he wants to go tackle. You know, and you remember with Grezo, they had to tell him, you've already won the ball. You don't have to go win it again, you know. And that's what Patrickson looks like to me. But then that Ajax training kicks in, and, man, it's not a lateral pass. I mean, he's breaking lines, and he's pinging balls, you know, 30 or 40 yards forward. And all of a sudden you saw Paul Arioli get up the field a little bit more. Well, why is that? Because Patrickson Delgado is willing to make that 30-yard pass, put him into a better position early, quick. You know, without, you know, before the defense has a chance to set up. And that's so valuable to a winger or a wing back. So I do really like that guy. Now, he's young. You ask him to come in as a starter. Right now, he's coming in, you know, it's a little easier to come in at a game. And, you know, players are a little bit tired, and you've made some adjustments. So you ask him to start, and now you're expecting things. So, you know, it's a little bit more tricky than just that, but I sort of agree that if Paxton can't get back healthy really, really quickly, and I just really hope he can, but if he can't, I want to see that same combo, because I think Patrickson Delgado, his 20-year-old legs, he can cover a lot of ground and keep Iatamendi from having to do so much running. You know, Iatamendi covered more ground than anybody that first match, and he's got that in him. But if Patrickson Delgado can do that, do some of the dirty work so that Iata is free just to, you know, do a little bit more of the deep line playmaking, I think that would set up really well.
I just want to expand something on a little bit further on Delgado starting. Knowing that Nico prefers to have a more stable midfield on the road, he would probably be rotating with Frazier starting road games and Delgado starting home games is more realistic. I'm not saying Delgado should start every game because he is young, and knowing how Nico likes his players, I have a feeling that a rotation with him in the future would more likely with him playing home games and like I said, a veteran like Frazier starting on the road, which is usually what Nico prefers.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know that I necessarily see it that way. I think, you know, if you decide that Delgado is your guy, then, you know, you roll with him. And there's going to be between League Cup, Open Cup, you know, there's going to be plenty of games to get to rotate players in. But I think if you decide Patrickson is your guy, then to be honest with you, I think Liam's a good player. I think Patrickson Delgado, what I've seen, he has a higher upside. So agreed. Go ahead and get him in the lineup and you know, get him going. And but to your point, I think the rotation might be on the road. at the wingback position, maybe it looks a little different. Maybe on the road, you go with Marco Farfán over there, you know, who's got a real defensive mindset. What's that?
If he's healthy.
Yeah, no. I would anticipate he's going to be. I talked to him at training the other day, and I sort of made a joke. I said, Marco, I pointed to the field with all the other players, and he was running on the side with Korcha. And I said, Marco, you told me you were going to be out there this week instead of over here with, you know, running on the side with us. And he said, Steve, I'm dying. I will be there next week. I will be in training next week. And Nico said the same thing. So that was last week. So in that case, next week is this week. And I don't know that we'll see him start, but I bet we'll see Marco get on the field this week.
Well, it's a great conversation. I think here, as our friend Hoach says, you know, does that mean Jose, you know, Paul doesn't start? And but I think too, I mean, that's this dialogue right now, this kind of issue. Like, you got this formation, you've got a roster with more depth, even despite the injuries, than this team has had in a long time. Quality depth, and so yeah, I mean, Sebastian Letjet, we know he's a quality player still. He can do some things. Clearly his role is changing. He is not, he'll get some starts here and there, I'm sure, as he did last Saturday. But it seems like some of these guys are going to have to adjust their playing time since if this thing's going to get right, or they're going to have to meet what Nico, because for me, I would always say, I would love for Paul to win that starting wingback job and claim it. And then Giovanni Jesus is healthy or whoever, that they have to fight for it. I mean, that's what a coach wants, right? So I think there'll be minutes for everybody, but.
Well, I just wanted to answer that and say Paul starts until Velasco and Giovanni Jesus get 100% healthy and informed. That's a long ways away. We're talking near the end of the season. Plenty of time for Paul to stake his claim on a starting spot and force the other players to beat him out. So no, you don't trade him away. But it is an interesting subject to point out that we have so many players playing out of position that at one point do you say, okay, maybe we should trade this player away and bring in a player that can play that position. That's like a mid-season conversation, I think. I think Paul's going to give everyone a chance to earn their spots. But if, say, come mid-season, we're still don't have a wingback performing and Giovanni Jesus is still not available, maybe you trade somebody that doesn't fit what you're trying to do. We have way too many midfielders right now, even though some aren't healthy. But once Paxton gets healthy, and you're gonna have Paxton, Legette, you're gonna have Ilara, you're gonna have Frazier, you're gonna have Delgado and Siki. That's six midfielders for two spots. I wouldn't be shocked if someone gets traded for depth at other positions, namely center back or wing back.
Well, good stuff. We're going to start to wrap up. Our last question of the night is just as FC Dallas prepares to welcome Vancouver, who is going to be a tough out. I don't think I don't know if there's a team other than Austin that looks like a struggling team that doesn't have some quality in all over the place. And Vancouver seems to have gotten stronger a bit. Still don't know if they're going to be, but what that means for them postseason time. But it's an important match. FC Dallas really needs these three points. As you said, folks maybe that, Steve, that's the image. You're hovering over the panic button. You're starting to get a little uncomfortable, but not quite sure. Get a win this weekend, 6 points from the opening four matches. Hey, slower start to the season, but you can start to build something. So I think it's a very important match. What do you want to see this weekend, Steve, from FC Dallas?
The team, the simplest thing is the team just has to play a little better than they did in the last home game. Where they just, I'll just tell you, I think Montreal really has something going. I think Laurent Courtois has something going up there. Kokoro, the striker, got a goal, his first goal the other day. Man, that guy, I think he's going to be terrific. I think they've got that midfield that they have. Anyway, So you sort of take that game and say, well, Dallas played a stinker. There was a tough team. You got Vancouver coming in. The problem with Vancouver is that Vancouver always seems to be the bogey team that comes in here that you think that's the team Dallas can really beat. And then somehow they pull the points out. They did it two or three years ago by scoring like the 98th minute, one of the latest goals in the history of the league. I think maybe that was just a tying game. So what needs to happen is they've got to have a few more offensive ideas. And while they're creating these offensive ideas, how Jesus and Peter Musa can play together, the thing that I will say, and I said this on a post-game show, is that this new system was created with more offense in mind, and that's fine. But there's a cost. There's going to be a cost to trying to add offense, and that is, we see it already, in three games they've given up five goals. That's a lot higher rate than they have in the 2 years under Nico Stevez. So you ask what has to happen. They have to find ways, excuse me, guys, they have to find ways to continue to create offensive, to find offensive ideas without suffering too much cost going the other way. And so far they haven't really done a good job of either of that. They got to get the offensive ideas, but also have that rest defense. That was always what it was under Nico before. It was very structured back behind the ball so that if they lose the ball, they can defend or delay immediately. They've lost a little bit of that. So they just have to keep finding the balance in there. And I think they can find it. They just got to get a few more healthy bodies, and I think it'll be easier to find.
Mm-hmm. Jose?
I'm not looking forward to this match at all. Vancouver, people forget, they were a playoff team last year. And they're off to a good start this year. I mean, yes, they had to settle for a draw at home against Charlotte, but they went to San Jose and walked out of there with 3 points, winning 2-0. They played like they always play against Dallas. You know, they play that low block. You welcome you to have possession and try to hit you on the counter. And they go for the point on the road late, and they did that against San Jose. They scored two goals past the 74th minute. And in a game where they had 39% possession and only had like 8 shots on, but 4 of them were on target. So that's going to be the game plan. They're going to come here. They're going to say, "Hey, Dallas, we dare you to break us down, and then we're going to hit you on the counter, and we only need to score one goal, and that should be enough for us to. We're solid enough defensively to keep you out of goal." And that's what the game plan is going to be. It's going to be a hard watch, and it's going to be Dallas being put to the test. You got to have to figure out how to break down Vancouver if you want to avoid allowing them to at least walk out of here with a point, because Vancouver will be more than happy to do that. They'll be happy to come here, stagnate everything, take their shots, and if they don't get them, they'll be happy to walk out of here with a 0-0 draw.
Well, we'll leave it there. We appreciate everybody, all the hosts, for all your comments, and everybody else watching. And of course, we will be posting the audio from this wherever you find podcasts. You can look up the Afterburn Soccer Show and subscribe and listen on the go wherever it is that life leads you. We also want to plug our Steve's Substack site with some excellent articles and commentary already. The Texas 11 .substack.com, and that's 11 is in the Roman numerals. So yeah, check it out, subscribe there, and see what Steve is up to as he's reflecting on this team and bringing that perspective that only he can. I have no idea what this last comment is. If we lose against Vancouver, it'll be terrible timing for Nico, considering it's doesn't ignite.
I don't know.
Is it some kind of is there a dozen eggs like promo? The first 1,000 fans get a dozen eggs. I mean, that would be interesting.
It's news to me if it is, but
that would be an unusual promotion. All right. Well, thanks, everybody. Thank you, Steve. Thanks, Jose. Good night, everyone.
Thanks, guys. Good night.